However, it's a pleasure to see you all. It's a pleasure to spend a little time together. And as he mentioned, it is my anticipated, unless Mashiach comes over the next 24 hours or so, I think we're going to have a plane tomorrow night to head back with some folks. So now we have this opportunity to think together and to plan for our own growth. And there are a couple of different concepts that I think a lot of us think of as, you know, a nice idea, sort of like a recent flavor, like something that people have been into the last couple of years, last couple of decades, that are in fact mitzvahs d'oraisa, are in fact members of the list of 613 mitzvahs. And the Rambam has a number of these in the first volume of Mishnah Torah, Sefer Hamada. I'll give you a couple of examples, we're going to focus on one of them. So for instance, Rambam talks that, we think about having nice mitzvahs, trying to be a more honest person, a more decent person. Yeah, that's like a nice idea. Well, I open up the Rambam, beginning of those days, he says, developing one's character, one of the 613 mitzvahs. Growth. We had a lot of conversation about growth over the last couple of weeks, and Mitzvah the next couple of weeks, and Mitzvah for a lifetime. And again, that sounds like a sort of a loose concept. As a matter of fact, you open the Rambam, to begin Hilchos Tshuva, he seems to understand that growing as a Jew is a core part of the mitzvah d'oraisa of tshuva. If I tell you that it's important, then this is a conversation for a different time, but an important conversation we should have at some point, that, I have to tell you that if there's, if you have hard feelings inside, it's important to share them. If you have resentment, you're carrying around resentment about something, it's important to communicate, not keep it bottled up. Say, I think my mother told me that. And maybe the guidance counselor, school psychologist told me that. Maybe the therapist I see told me that. Those all might be true, and it's also, according to the Rambam, at the end of the sixth parak, the Hilchos Deos, a mitzvah d'oraisa, to communicate about resentment, to communicate, have those difficult conversations, rather than just keeping stuff balled up inside, a very good idea, a mitzvah d'oraisa. And then there's connection with the Rebbe, a warm connection with the Rebbe. So you would be excused if you thought that having a warm Rebbe Talmud connection is like something that someone's thought of 10, 20, 30 years ago in order to sell their yeshiva. Yeah, we have a warm Rebbe Talmud connection. So it is an important aspect of what you should look for in yeshiva. It's also a mitzvah d'oraisa. The Rambam opens near the very beginning of the sixth parak of Hilchos Deos, moving from the end to the beginning. The Rambam says, quoting from the Chachmei HaMedrash, that over the course of Chumash Devarim, the Torah speaks a lot about our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and different aspects of our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Torah speaks among many different terms that the Pesukim can use. One of them is ledav kabo, to be davik, to stick to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Medrash says, you stick to God. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not a physical being. If we were to just, if there was something we would compare him to, it would be Esh Ochla. So it has enormous energy, fire. You can't say, how do you connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? In other words, how do you connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And Rabbi quotes the Halacha from the Midrash Halacha, that Ledav Kavo means to connect yourself to Talmid Chacham. Hidavek b'chacham, to spend time having a warm relationship with the Rebbe. A warm relationship with the Rebbe is, in fact, the mitzvah d'oraisa. One of the targeted mitzvahs, like shaking luluf, like putting on tefillin, like giving tzedakah, like not speaking lashon hara, developing warm connections with the Rebbe outside the Beis Medrash. You should have warm connections with the Rebbe inside the Beis Medrash, and you should. Yeah, that's Talmud Torah. And both inside and outside the Beis Medrash, Rambam describes spending time eating with Talmid Chachamim and having a business partnership with Talmid Chachamim, spending time outside the Beis Medrash. Why? That's a mitzvah d'oraisa. Why? To pick up from what you see. The Rambam goes on to say, it's a Mishnah, it's a Pasuk in the Chumash, it's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Mishnah speaks about being misaveit ba'afar ragleihem. Shosef et samas devrayim, to thirstily drink up the words of Talmid Chacham. That's not only the shir, that's watching the way they handle life. To be misabik by faragleim, those of you who had a chance to hear President Berman earlier today, he spoke about sitting at the feet of our Rosh Yeshiva. That's a Mishnah. That's a Mishnah. Misabik by faragleim. That's a mitzvah mitzvah. I had the Baruch Hashem, the incredible schuss to spend the last 28 years of my life in NYU, and surrounded by Adira Torah. Until Corona, I think I had not been off campus for more than 2 months at a time, over a quarter century. So whatever I did or didn't manage to learn the Torah of the Mada, I enjoyed it, whatever I managed to accomplish in that field. But one of the things I certainly noticed is one of the unsung, underappreciated learning opportunities is there's so much to learn in terms of the personhood, in terms of the Tikkun HaMidos and the character, from when you're surrounded by a Adirei Torah. It's the way the Gemara says, a gadol shimusha yoser milimuda. Sometimes you learn more from interactions with a great person, even more than you learn from the formal teaching and the formal learning. I had the schus to be as the title indicates, Baruch Hashem, to spend time with great people. So I had three other rabbeim that had the most time, most opportunity to spend time with the Rav Shechter, Rav Tversky, and Rav Neuwirth. I'd like to share some thoughts, the things that I've seen, the things that I've noticed, and then maybe we'll, before we close, talk about how you can seek out those same opportunities. Just one caveat before I get started. I see some smiles and maybe a couple of smirks. Some relationships are way too precious. The precious family relationships, part of the preciousness is the fact that it's internal. And the privacy of family relationships is part of their preciousness. So I had the schus to spend 6 years in my shechter shiur before I was family, before there was any anticipation of becoming family. So I'd be glad to discuss, draw some insights from those first 6 years as purely as a Talmud, as well as some of the other rabbeim that I have a chance to spend time with. I think there are a couple of things worth thinking about. Lessons that we can absorb, and things that are remarkable. And the first one is perhaps the most fundamental of all in building your Jewish personality and personhood. Shechter likes to point out that the Orach HaTzaddikim, which is a sefer from the days of the Rishonim about Tikkun HaMidos, so he talks in how it has proclamed many different midos tovos and many different midos rows. And when he talks about Anava, the Orach HaTzaddikim says that Anava, humility, is the king of all midos tovos. Gaiva, being egotistical, being arrogant, is the root of all other midos rows. And Anava, its opposite, being a humble person, being a modest person, being a low-key person, is the shorish of all midos tovos. It's the root of all other good midos. And one of the things that I've noticed around yeshiva is what anava actually is. I think a lot of times when we think about being humble, we think about like doing like humble things, like to put yourself down or whatever it is. But one of the things that I've noticed from many of my rabbeim is anava isn't doing shuffle things. Anava is when you're an extraordinary person and you still treat yourself like a regular guy. All those three rabbeim I just mentioned, as well as some others, you know, they'll pick up the phone and hello, this is Herschel Shechter. Hello, this is Mayor Tversky. And I'm taken aback. I remember the first time the first voicemail I think that Rabbi Neuwirth left for me, it was this, hello, Rabbi Cohen, this is Yaakov Neuwirth before. And I'm like staring at the phone, like that was entirely backwards. But from his perspective, it was just not like that's my name. That's what I called myself when I was 16. Why would I call myself anything different when I'm a couple years older? You've accomplished extraordinary things. But another means you treat yourself like a normal person, like an ordinary person, even if you're accomplishing extraordinary things. And that's why so many people have remarked over the years, if you sit near the front of the library, sitting near a Shechter Morning Seder, so there, you know, sometimes he sits and learns, and often people come to talk with him. So sometimes there's guys from Yeshiva come to talk with him, you know, guys not say Yeshiva come to talk with him, discuss a Shaila, or discuss some other substance of issue. Sometimes there's people want to, you know, talk. And a roommate of mine back in the day sat and still sits up front of the very front door of his marriage. And he told me, like one time he was sitting there and a fellow came to Rav Shechter years ago. Because Rav Shechter, the whole story about his watch, he bought a watch and it broke, and like It sounded at first like it was getting to the Shiloh. It was just like he wanted to tell Shefter about the saga of his broken watch. And Shefter very patiently listened. Because, here's a person who wants to talk to me. So we, lesser people would be more taken with themselves. And lesser people would be like, stop, I'm not coming. No, I'm a person, he's a person, he wants time. Why would that idea? I have to go somewhere. If I have time, I have to give him time. Just to treat yourself like an ordinary person. I have vivid memories of from my. I've gotten so used to it that it no longer strikes me, although it should. But when I first came to the Faberham, the early exposures to Rebbe and Shul, I remember being so struck. There weren't enough tables. There was too many more people coming to the Beis Medrash. There weren't enough tables, so he just went and got himself a table for the people who need to learn. You're the Rav. No, we need tables. So why wouldn't I do that? He's also very adept at not letting people sort of snag the table away to the family. Make sure, if the paper towels are, if it's wintertime and everyone's drying their hands and paper towels are overflowing the garbage can, so he'll stick his foot in and make room. Because I'm looking at wow. That's why I was very struck the first time I davened in the Abraham, years before we moved. I've heard this is a shul with such enormous kavod harav. I remember being shocked that they didn't even wait for the rabbi. He's still davening Shema Esrei, and the shots already started Kaddish. I was like, what's going on here? They're such kavod harav. They totally ignored the rabbi. And then I found out, no. But I knew that's the minute in the shul. The rabbi said, why do they have to wait for me? He said, then I have to cut my davening shorter. So he would rather Zen man. Don't wait for me, just wait for Roman Tzibor. And I'll daven as long as I want to, which makes perfect sense. It's so rational. For few people are so rational. You have to have very little ego to be able to be so clear-eyed and not be caught up in your own color. I'll share a story from before, second, third, fourth year of Shasta Shira, or not related to the slightest, other than as Talmud. So I've been part of the Chevra in that we're all the Shira, and also often used to stay in for Shabbos and go for Sudas at least once a month or so. And my parents happened to be at the same wedding as the Shaftas from opposite sides. So it was an opportunity for them to go and say thank you. She worked for the Sudas. So my parents went over, they drew so the atomic parents. And now it happens to be that my mother had been a couple of years ago a classmate of Rabbi Shefter's older sister, Sarah Shefter, now Sarah Steinberg. So they said, yeah, we're trying to come friends. Thank you so much without missing a beat. It's, oh hi, I'm Herschel Shefter, I'm Sarah Steinberg's kid brother. Which, again, you don't take yourself seriously out of that. That's just a natural thing. That's our natural connection, which makes perfect sense. It's just that most people have way too much ego in the way to just see things as they are, to just allow things to just do things. And I would, in terms of that aspect of anava, one of the things that I've noticed with a number of people, particularly with our Newberg, watching our Newberg in action and watching our Benedict in action, is that anava is a prerequisite to wisdom and to good judgment. Anava is a prerequisite to pikkus. Because once your ego is not in the way, then you're able to see things as they are and actually just figure out what makes sense and figure out what the right thing is. But anava is an absolute prerequisite. It is so, so, so important. It is so important. Like Gemara, we mentioned that speaking before the Gemara speaks on how. Based on the Pesukim in Torah, Tova Hashem called Valei. Toiva is a strong word, as we know. Tova Hashem called Valei. Arrogance is described as Toiva. Kadosh Baruch Hu abhors a person who is self-centered. It doesn't mean that you put yourself down. It doesn't mean that you're a non-functional human being. Adrav, you're playing the deal. You're not focused on yourself, and you're focused on important things. Another critical midah, the Gemara says begin in brachas. I think it might be the first dvar musar in Shas. We begin with sefer brachas. The Gemara says, Rabbi Zeira says, lamed lashon chalom re'en yodea. A person should train himself, lamed, should habituate his tongue. They say, I don't know. Get comfortable saying, I don't know. Shema tizbadeh b'seyachiz. Otherwise, you're going to end up making stuff up, it's going to be boda, and you're going to get caught in your lies. The line from Mark Twain is that the great thing about the truth is you don't have to remember it. You don't have to remember the stories made up. But in order to tell the truth, as Zera points out, you need to be comfortable saying, I don't know. Most people are not. And this is sort of the, perhaps sort of part of the connection to Emes and Anava. You always feel the need to have something to say. You always feel the need to always have a response. So you're really making stuff up. But Emes is really important. Anava enables Emes. And those of us who have spent time in this kol may have noticed that one of the wisest people we've met is also says, I don't know, more often than almost that. Yair Shechter's famous for saying, I don't know, frequently. It's a Gemara. My first Gemara is a Shas. And it's in service of Emes. And it's in service of being real. And Emes is how you speak, and Emes is how you are. To be a real and authentic person, and to say the truth. To be comfortable saying, I don't know, you don't know. Rabbi Tversky and Rabbi Tversky are extraordinary models of Emes. I still remember a number of years ago. I'm going to approximate this, but I don't remember all the details. But I believe it was something like this. Rabbi Tversky had been schmoozing with my wife one day, and I mentioned that something took place at 2:30. She came over to her the next day, if I remember correctly, and said, I said yesterday at 2:30, I meant it was approximately 2:30. But we were so struck by that. People, talk and you say stuff and whatever. That's fine. If you're not sure exactly what time it is, it's say around 2:30. Don't say there were 15 people there. If there were 15 people, say there were 15 people there. But not say there were, I think there were approximately 15 people. I think there were 15 people there. There were approximately 15 people there. And it's such an important sensitivity. Meet us at this. And and I know that even if we don't have that meter yet, but when we see someone with that meter, it's extraordinarily impressive. And you know that's someone you can trust. Don't you want to be that type of person too? Maybe we'll show them for any of day. To be sensitive to saying ass, and to say what is, to be comfortable saying I think when you think and you're not sure, to say approximately, to be and of course. And these are finer sensitivities. To even be sensitive to more delicate aspects of matters, and of course, go without saying, not just talking a big game and making stuff up, to be real. When the Gemara says, mentioned before, the Rambam identifies the mitzvah of midos as the halach of the drachim. That when we develop more appropriate midos, more balanced positive midos, where we're reshaping our personality after the divine model. We're being like a Kaddish Baruch, we're going to Kaddish Baruch Hu's ways. So we don't know exactly what this means, but the Gemara speaks about this notion that Chosama Shal Kaddish Baruch Hu Emes. Kaddish Baruch Hu's signature is Emes, it's true. Not sure exactly what that means. Obviously, any description we have of a Kaddish Baruch Hu, all of our descriptions are in human terms because our experiences have all been in human terms. So whenever we describe a Kaddish Baruch Hu, of course we don't really have the language to describe it. It's always an approximation. It's always sort of using a human reality as sort of like the best metaphor to describe a sort of divine reality. So we don't know exactly what it means that God's signature is truth, but we do know that my signature is a statement of who I am, and this is me. So Chosama Shal Kaddish Baruch Hu Emes, God's signature of truth, certainly means that MS is one of the most fundamental truths. Being a real person, one of the most fundamental needs of a Kaddish Baruch Hu. It's therefore one of the most important needs for us to cultivate. And MS and Anava come together, they together enable what we're talking about before. So focus on what's really important. and to be able to think things through and think about what are my goals, what are we actually trying to accomplish here, what's real and what's not, and then to make decisions around what really is. The third point I would highlight is refinement. It's often the case, it's sometimes the case that people look good on the outside, and then as you get to know them more, you become less impressed. Probably many of us, if not all of us, have had experiences on the outside, from a distance. Someone looked cool, someone looked good, someone looked impressive. Then as you get to know them more, as you zoom in more, a lot of less attractive rough spots come into focus. And no doubt many of you have had those experiences, and no doubt all of you, if you haven't yet, will have. We'll come across people in life who are like that, look from a distance, look good, and as you get closer, it's important to know that there are plenty of people like that, and there are also people who walk this planet who are not like that. And there are people who, as you get to know them more and more over the course of months and years and decades, become more and more impressive. You see more consistency. Everyone's doing it. Every person can be. Everyone has weaknesses. Every human being has weaknesses. Moshe Rabbeinu also is cut off. But the person is more and more impressive as you get closer. So that's that does exist. And that sort of refinement is extraordinarily impressive. And the Gemara says in Masechas Barakat Daf Zayin, where was the pasuk in Malachi? Nabi Malachi, the last Nabi for the Jewish people, 1,000 years after Moshe Rabbeinu, beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash, he says he describes a Kohen. Yisif say Kohen Yishmer Das. The lips of the Kohen have a lot of holding on to a lot of knowledge. So Rav Akshay appeared. Here's a man who's very law, very learned, and they seek out Torah from him. He has what to offer, and they seek it out from him. Why? Because he's an angel. So the Gemara says, well, what does that pasuk mean? The pasuk is giving us practical advice. As long as it was important practical advice you will need over the next couple of years. Not on a daily basis, in terms of big decisions in the next couple of years, this Gemara is one of the most important. The Gemara says that this pasuk Malachi will teach you how to choose. When you're in high school, you always said choose your every subject. You can angle, you can push, you can hop to get into a different cheer. But your Rebbe is not just the one whose class or shiur you happen to be in. It's a question of who you choose. Whom will you choose to attach yourself? With whom you choose to spend time? And certainly beyond high school, you make plenty of decisions. About yeshivas, about Rebbeim. And the Gemara says, the Gemara has advice for how to choose a Rebbe. And the advice is, the Gemara says, that's what the Pasuk Malachi is saying. If a Rebbe is like a Malachi, he has plenty of knowledge. But not just he has plenty of knowledge, they seek it from him. Meaning, sometimes there are people who have plenty of Torah knowledge, but you should not be seeking it from him. So who should you choose to seek from? Obviously, someone has Torah to offer, but that's not enough. Torah to offer, and he's an angel. Kimal Shem Tzachasim. The Gemara says, if the Rav is done with Hashem Tzachas, the Rebbe is angelic, then that's how you want to catch yourself there. And if he's not so angelic, then he may have a lot of Torah to offer, maybe an interesting shir to listen to, but he's not a Rebbe for you. And to be angelic certainly means to be humble. To be angelic certainly means to be real and to be honest and to be authentic. And to be angelic certainly means to be a person of great refinement. And a person, as you get to know more, you see more and more refinement and more impressive egos. And maybe spend the last couple of minutes talking about how I think that Gemara is an important transition to think about how you can do this also. Because it's important for you to seek this out. It's important for you to seek out people to learn Torah from. And people, as we, to close where we began, you and I, all Jews have a mitzvah d'oraisa, a mitzvah d'oraisa is being mistadek b'chacham. Mistadek b'chacham u'besalmideim. Both b'tamei chachamim, in our language, as well as with Rambam uses the term, Talmud chacham, b'tamei Torah. You're going to attach yourself to Madrichim. You're going to attach yourself to guys in Yeshiva a couple years older than you. You attach yourself to role models of that sort. And you attach yourself to Bita Nechachamim. Rami talks about being Mizdavik Nechachamim Uvisal Midehim. So how do you do that? How do you do that practically? It's highly recommended. So how do you do it? It's highly recommended, and it's Mitzvah, like the other Mitzvah we spoke about before. So what do you do? So it's the step number one, I think, is, and you can put this into practice over the next couple of weeks, and you can put it in practice over the next 2 years, and you can put it into practice the rest of your life. Number one, be discerning. That's what we were just saying before. Then love ultimately. Be discerning and be choosy. And don't just be taken by someone who is very charismatic. And I never understood the taste, but some people have a taste. Some Talmidim are very drawn to people who are very into themselves. The certain charisma, the people are Balagaiva, and some people have a taste for Balagaiva. I never did. Okay? You know, some people like vanilla, some people like chocolate. I don't know. It's a different taste. I never understood it, and Chazal goes into recommend that same taste you don't need to acquire. If you're looking for someone who's really humble, looking for someone who's really real, who's really innocent, who's really refined, and there aren't rough edges, and there isn't evil bad, and there isn't self-centeredness, and there isn't, it's not all about him. Charisma is lovely, charisma is wonderful, but when charisma is not just charisma, but it's creating a cult of personality, it may be attractive, that's not the way you look. But be discerning. Find someone who knows the transcendent of Torah. Find someone who it's not all about him. Find someone who's comfortable to his remain. Find someone who sees himself as a part of the Masorah, not it's all about me. And then you should look for opportunities. You should look for opportunities to spend time. Look for opportunities to talk and learn. Look for opportunities outside the business marriage as well. I remember vividly, I forever indebted to a friend of mine, Rabbi Tziron, for many, many things. One of which was, while you publish in the Torah Journal every year, a couple hundred pages, Rabbein write, Talmidim write, Shtek Torah, for the Beis Yitzchak. So my third, usually it's guys who are in the third year in Yeshiva who edit. So before my third year, someone asked me to be one of the editors, and I was like, oh, I'm sorry. I've never seen you like that. Why are you spending time on this? No. And Rabbi Tzirah, who had done the year before me, said, it's an opportunity, take it. Opportunities come to way, take it. Which is generally good advice in life. Don't always take every opportunity, but be open to opportunities. And think them through, and don't just say, oh, it's not for me. Think it through. And one of the inobvious benefits was that we had to divide the list of Rosh Yeshiva among the two editors, and each of us had a list of Rosh Yeshiva that we had to come over and ask them to write, and they didn't write the first time, remind them, and sometimes the third reminder, and it ended up being an opportunity to have conversations, it was an excuse to have conversations with a whole slew of Talmidei Chachamim who I just never spoken to before. Look for opportunities. Look for opportunities, and why I do that is prepare yourself with questions to ask. And some people are very easy to talk to, and some people are not. And sometimes some of us are less shy, and some of us are more shy. Some of our body might want to spend time with are very, very inviting, and some are a little more quiet. But just because you're a little more quiet, or I feel a little shy, it doesn't mean that I can't strike up a conversation. But here's a tip. Look for those opportunities, and then be prepared with things to ask. As with anyone else, you want to get the conversation going. And once the conversation gets going, but you know you're going to have the opportunity to spend time with Talmud Chacham. So prepare in advance. Think about a couple of things you want to talk about, a couple of lines of conversation you want to raise. Interesting, Shai, you're learning this. Tell me, he's from there. He's telling me stories about this. I don't know. Come prepare. Prepare yourself to take advantage of the opportunity. As you get older, you'll have chances. You may have a little bit of an high school, probably beyond high school, come up more often. Opportunities to eat pseudos, especially pseudo Shabbos, with your rebbeim or with other Talmidei Chachamim, are extraordinary opportunities of Daf Kavod. Extraordinary opportunities to see people, see how people live life, to see how great and refined people approach life, how they conduct themselves with their family, how they interact with people. It's such rich, rich opportunities. And I want to end with a point that I made in the past in the beginning. which is that this is not, sometimes people make the mistake, just like sometimes people make the mistake of thinking, as we mentioned at the beginning, that, you know, a warm relationship with a rabbi, that's like, you know, what the PR department says, that's like a modern recent concept. It is also a recent concept, and it's also a concept, it's also part of the Chumash that was given us, Tzatzah and Harsida, 33,300 years ago. But not only is a warm relationship with a rabbi a mitzvah d'oraisa, it's a mitzvah that applies throughout one's life. Sometimes you think that they're rabbi, you know, I'm rabbi in Kol, rabbi in high school, in yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, yeshiva in America. Those are all true. But very often, the most significant rebbein in your life will be the rebbein that you're going to have for years and decades beyond. So hopefully, over the next number of years, you are and will build relationships with rebbein that will stand the test of time. And you'll find, not every time you'll have a new kind of person, you'll find those one or two or three or maybe more people with whom you really resonate, with whom you really connect, and who are extraordinarily impressive human beings, extraordinarily impressive values, extraordinarily impressive in your Hakamim, people of Anaba and Emes or refinement that you want to, who are more and more impressive, you spend more time with them. But understand that it isn't just for when you're a teenager in your early 20s. It's for a lifetime. And when you, one of the, you know, it's clear that whom you choose to marry is one of the most defining, dispositive decisions. It's sometimes less obvious that where you choose to live as an adult is also one of the most dispositive, defining decisions of a lifetime. Where you choose to raise your children, who, you know, we think a lot about, like, I want to get into this year, this class, I want to be like clever. I want to go, you know, when you're choosing, when you're thinking about in a year or two, thinking about Yeshiva San Francisco, when you're coming back to Yeshiva in America, a lot of thought goes into who my chevra is going to be. And it's absolutely important. That's actually the very first halacha in the sixth parak around those things. That's not only true when you're 18 or 21. It's also true when you're 35 and 47 and 69. Chevra matters for your children and for yourself. And rebellion matters. And the choice of a community is sometimes people think it doesn't matter. Community is wherever I end up. Certainly issues of community are relevant. Certainly where you're working is going to be relevant. There'll be plenty of practical factors. But it's absolutely key that the choice of community, one of the veto factors, not the only one, but one of the veto factors is that you're choosing to live amongst a chevra of like-minded, growth-oriented in the Torah, and understand that the rabbanim of your community will probably be your primary rebbein in the long run. And the choice of whom are you going to seek out, and to whom will you attach yourself, making the right choice initially where you want to be, to whom you want to attach yourself, and then making the ongoing choice to invest in those relationships, in conversations and learning, conversations about life decisions, and just opportunities to spend time and to be inspired and to watch live models is critically important when you're 17 and critically important when you're 47 as well. And that takes us back to where we began. That the Rabban taught us that a warm connection to impressive Talmid Chachamim, to refined impressive Talmid Chachamim, is a core part of our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Remember what he said. If we're dovetavo, we attach ourselves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through the connection and the relationship we cultivate with the right type of Talmid Chachamim. Because I will learn from them how I'm, not that I'm going to be a clone of them, but I'll learn from them how to shape myself. I'll learn from them how to improve and polish myself. I'll learn from them how I can shape my relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I want to say thank you so much.